The following recording is of a platform address presented to the Ethical Society of St. Louis by Kate Lovelady, leader of the Ethical Society of St. Louis. Entitled Horizontal Religion, it was recorded live on 7 October 2007.
Our theme this year is ethical communication, trying to find out what that means and how we can achieve it. To paraphrase one of ethical culture's founding premises, this year is dedicated to the knowledge, the love, and the practice of better communication. Over the last couple weeks, we've had two leader emeriti of the society describe some ways to communicate better within ourselves through probing our unconscious and taking better care of ourselves, and some ways to communicate better with the wider culture through looking at where we need to challenge the status quo out there and where we might need to challenge the status quo in here and amongst each other. And I want us to keep in mind both the idea of caring for ourselves and challenging our own status quos as we now move to look at communication in its most everyday form, which is communication as how we listen and talk to each other. I became interested in interpersonal communication when I was a lay leader at an ethical society in North Carolina. I had been hearing from more and more people there that they wanted our ethical community to feel more spiritual. And I didn't know what they meant by that, but I figured that this spiritual element that was missing was something that I could probably conjure up for them if I could just get them to tell me what words or poems they wanted to hear or what music they wanted to hear, or maybe if I scattered some flowers around or if I lit some smelly candles, they'd get all spiritual and then they'd be happy. So one evening, I invited a number of these spiritually inclined folks to my house to tell me the recipe for a more spiritual, ethical society. And you can probably guess how successful that was. Turns out there is no recipe. Most of these folks didn't even know precisely what it was that they wanted. They just knew that somehow a crucial part of what they thought of as ethics and inspiration and being fully human was missing. Poetry and music and beauty are important, but there was something more fundamental that I wasn't seeing. And I was very annoyed by this meeting. And what a failure it had been. And then people kept coming up to me in the following days and weeks saying how important and meaningful that meeting had been to them. And I began to understand that the gathering itself had been inspirational, spiritual, if you will, and we had not so much as sounded a gong. What we had done is share our stories and our frustrations and our ideals. And what we hadn't done is try to assign blame or give advice. We hadn't jockeyed to see who had the most information, who had the best rhetoric. That meeting became a spiritual experience because we were there to really listen to each other. Because we were there to communicate not simply information that we had gathered somewhere, but our beliefs, our emotions, our experiences, our common humanity. We were there to explore together rather than try to persuade each other of the correct idea. Now, I titled my address this morning, Horizontal Religion, not to try to make humanism sound more sexy, although it probably wouldn't hurt if humanism was a little more sexy. But I think that it's a simple way of describing humanistic religions such as ethical culture. And I've said before, I think that traditional Western religion tends to have a vertical hierarchical orientation. There's a focus on gods, on an afterlife, on a heaven. Traditional Eastern religion tends to have an inward focus. Religious humanism has a horizontal, democratic orientation. What is of supreme importance is each other, how we relate to each other, how we can relate to more and more people. The philosopher Richard Rorty, he describes this as replacing traditional religious metaphors of height or depth with ones of width. So our ideal is not heaven, but the horizon. That is, on progressing toward ethical ideals that are probably as far away as heaven, but that we are pursuing in this life to make this life better for all people. Another way to say this is that we focus on widening human potential rather than looking upward for supernatural providence. So if that's true, if we are a horizontal religion or philosophy, what should our practices be? Because we know that the primary practice of vertical religions is prayer. The primary practice of inward-focused religions and philosophies is meditation. What is the primary practice of a horizontal religion? Well, one important aspect is deed, such as the ethical action projects that we undertake in this society. But the way that most of us interact with others in our daily lives, in our homes, in our workplaces and communities, the primary way that we enact this horizontal relationship is simply the way that we communicate with each other. And so communication to me is not simply just something else that we should be working on, but making communication more ethical is the spiritual practice of ethical culture. But what kind of communication can qualify as a spiritual experience? I said a few weeks ago that we certainly know what it feels like to be on the receiving end of unethical communication, but we can also feel when we're communicating ethically, because during and after such interactions, we feel that we've been heard and understood, though not necessarily agreed with. And we also feel that we've heard and understood the other person, though we still may not agree with them. Ethical communication also results in each party empathizing a little more with the other. And most important, it results in some kind of change, some kind of growth. Maybe a new idea has been created. Perhaps a new friendship is formed, but somehow we're not the same person that we were before that interaction, because we've touched a piece of another person's experience and because we've allowed another person to really see our experience. If you've had that kind of encounter, that kind of communication with someone, you know what an incredible event that it can be. So why doesn't it happen more often? Why don't we just do it if it's so pleasant? You would think that a wonderful thing like this would be something that everyone would work to achieve at least as hard as we work to achieve, say, a healthy body. But communication is so intangible. If we get winded when we're walking up the stairs, we probably think, well, it's time to go to the gym, maybe time to drop a few pounds, maybe time to quit smoking. And sometimes communication failures can be very dramatic and involve yelling and flying plates and all kinds of things. And then we know, maybe we're not communicating so well here. But more often, communication problems are not so obvious, we may just feel slightly depressed or flat after talking with someone. We may feel bored. We may feel lonely, even though we're talking with someone. And we may blame others. They're boring. They're just not very bright. We may blame ourselves. Maybe I'm boring. Maybe I'm just not very bright. We may blame the situation. But rarely do we look hard at how we communicate with each other. In America, at least, and I imagine in other countries as well, there's a bias that communicating means talking. And this bias, I think, is a major reason why communication does not leap to mind as a spiritual experience. And it's funny because I think humanists consider ourselves very sophisticated. And yet religions that pray recognize that the highest form of prayer is to be open to whoever or whatever it is that you're trying to commune with and not just badgering that entity with demands and requests. And religions that meditate recognize that developing an inner calmness is really the way to communicate best with the self, to try to quiet all the chatter that's going on in your head. But we still tend to value talking over listening and telling people what's right instead of asking questions. One aspect of experience that most people describe as spiritual is the feeling of being fully present in the moment. You're really there, you're really alive, you're really with those people or wherever you are with yourself. How often are we truly present when we're conversing with someone? Most often when I'm talking with someone, I realize that I'm actually living in the past, and that I'm constantly making judgments about that person and interpreting their words based on my history with them, or worse, on my history with people like them. Or I'm living in the future, and Carol mentioned this, and that I'm planning my response and I'm anticipating a pause so that I can jump in as soon as they stop to breathe. And then I can take the conversation where I want or let them know how foolish that idea was, and here's a better one. And one result of this non-present conversation is that we're often just reciting pre-created scripts to each other. We're playing out assumed or assigned roles. If we want to change and grow as people and be authentic ethical agents, we need to encourage others to be authentic, which means we actually need to listen to other people, so that when we do respond, we're responding to the actual feelings and thoughts of the real person in front of us and not to a made-up caricature that we're carrying around in our heads. When we respond to a real person, I think we become more real ourselves and we drop those aspects that we have in which we act like caricatures sometimes. And a good place to start is just to become more curious about other people. Why they feel the way they do, what they've experienced maybe that has led them to believe what they believe, whether or not you believe what they believe. What exactly do they really think, as opposed to what I think they think? There's an improv acting game in which you have a conversation, and each person's sentence, the first word has to start with the last letter of the last word of the person who goes before you. So you have to listen to the very last breath before you can even start coming up with your response. The first time I played that game, it almost killed me. It was so painful, and it seemed like they would never stop talking. And I realized how much anticipation I have about jumping in. Because the way that I was brought up, of course, you start responding as soon as you think you know where the other person might be going. And from my experience, I am not the only person who was brought up this way. I think that we're brought up to see a lot of conversations as contests, where we have winners and losers, and you get extra points for quick retorts, you get extra points for sharp wit. And I developed a very sharp wit as a young woman. I could cut someone so deeply with a well-timed response or insult that I could shut anyone up in an instant. And I did that. And for a while, that felt good. And then it started to feel lonely. And then it started to feel cruel. And then I started to ask myself, maybe there's a better way to communicate with my fellow human beings. So I became a new, well, I didn't become a new person, but I started a new practice. First, I shut up. And that was hard. And then since I wasn't talking, I began to try to really listen, to put myself aside for a few moments in order to understand the person in front of me, to try to empathize no matter how much I might disagree. And that was much harder at first. And I admit, when I first started this practice of deep listening, is I thought about it as the ethical culture version of the hair shirt. That I would sacrifice my pleasure and I would deny the world my brilliant thoughts for this spiritual practice of listening, because it was supposed to be the better way to be. And what I found is that I started to fall in love with everyone that I talked to. Almost everyone. But when I listen deeply, it's almost as if I can hear this larger voice, this voice of humanity that we all speak with in different accents. I can hear the commonalities that confirm that we are a family and that each member of that family is both flawed and uniquely gifted with potential somewhere. So communication can be an ethical, spiritual act. It can carry the underlying message that we all have intrinsic worth. That we're all trying to hear each other, to understand each other, to have compassion for each other, to help each other grow. But communication can only do this when we learn to pay attention to how we listen and speak as much as we do to the subject matter. And this is frustrating for many people, particularly when we're used to communicating primarily to enlighten other people with our opinions. But a horizontal community is one in which equal attention must be paid to how things are done as to what things are done, so that everyone does feel heard, and so that people can share their stories and their feeling. They can share their authentic self without fear. Some of us here have a lot of negative feelings about traditional religion. Some of us here don't have those negative feelings. But what we have to remember is that St. Louis is still going to be a mostly traditionally religious city next Sunday, no matter what we say here. But what kind of community we have, whether that community is bigger or smaller, whether it's more or less diverse, whether it's more or less cynical, whether it's more or less open, that depends absolutely on how we express ourselves and how we listen to others. And I do want to say that I would never want the Ethical Society to become a humorless or sanctimonious place, and I don't want us to turn into the communication police. Sometimes we need to let off steam about people that are driving us crazy or that drove us crazy in the past. One of the reasons I decided to join that Ethical Society in North Carolina almost a decade ago, and not one of the other liberal religious or philosophical groups, is that some of the other groups were a little too pleasant for my taste. Do you know what I mean? Too much pleasantness can be inauthentic, and it can be a way of avoiding real communication. But if we don't want false pleasantness, that doesn't mean that our only other option is brutal so-called honesty. In a book called Crucial Conversations, which I'm leading a workshop on this afternoon after lunch, they describe what they call the sucker's choice of silence or violence. That is, the belief that we either have to be untrue to ourselves or to speak in a way that runs over the other person's feelings. You know you're taking the sucker's choice when you're either seething inside and working on that ulcer, or you're on the verbal attack and saying, well, somebody has to say this. There are many middle paths. There are many ways to express our feelings, even our feelings of frustration or fear or hurt, without belittling or blaming others, and we need to find and practice those ways for everyone's sake. To a certain extent, we build the world that we live in our own minds. When we don't speak up, the world seems more and more unsafe, and we feel powerless. When we speak up violently, whether it's with insults or blame or cruel jokes or hurtful sarcasm, we also make the world seem more unsafe. And we still feel powerless because other people can't hear our silence and they react against our violence by increasing their defenses and becoming violent in turn. Neither one of these strategies gets us where we really want to be. If we truly believe that every person has worth, we must be willing to try to improve how we communicate, which takes work. We have to work on listening. We have to work on sharing our true needs and feelings and not simply our judgments. I had an opportunity to practice this last weekend. Some evangelists came to our door. I always answer the door now when that happens because it's an opportunity to practice. And I listened hard to these women. I listened to their fears about crime and dishonesty and violence and what they saw happening to the children in their neighborhoods. I listened to their need for a safer, more loving world. And then I shared that I also had these fears and these needs, and that I work toward creating what I called heaven on earth in that conversation. And they said, oh, heaven is going to come on earth too. Jesus will return, and all the bad people will be gone, and there will be peace and love and brotherhood. And I thought, that sounds great. peace and love and brotherhood? And what do you mean all the bad people will be gone? Well, Jesus will wipe them out. So heaven on earth, for the folks at my door, meant getting rid of all the people they don't like or that don't have the correct beliefs. And I said, no offense, but that doesn't seem so miraculous to me. I mean, I could create a peaceful world if I could just kill all the people who disagree with me. Which was a smart-ass way of putting it, I admit. I need a lot more practice in ethical communication myself. I am not a paragon of communication virtue up here. And that conversation at my door did not end with us understanding each other much better, but we did part as friends, and we did part with an understanding that we did share concerns about the world and needs for a better world. And that's a beginning. But now I think, for all our talk of worth and dignity, do we secretly have the same belief that the world would be heaven if only all the bad, wrong-believing people converted to our way of thinking or disappeared? Isn't it too often how we talk about people we don't like, how we talk to them, how we dismiss instead of listen more deeply to them? Doesn't a part of us believe that communication would be heavenly if only others would listen to us, come around to our way of thinking, or otherwise shut up? True communication is frightening because it touches what is deepest in us. Underneath the most casual sounding conversation, our emotions are roiling. We may feel that our self-esteem is suddenly under threat, although we don't quite know why. Or we may feel that our need to belong, to be respected, to be liked, to be safe, is somehow under attack. We fall into the sucker's choice of silence or violence for a good reason, which is that we think these strategies will protect us from harm. But it turns out that our needs are not met by staying quiet, and nor are our needs met by going on the attack. And that's why better communication often begins with clarifying to ourselves what it is that we really want and need. And that takes time, and it takes calmness. And time and calmness seem to be in ever shorter supply these days, which might explain the degenerating nature of conversation. Because I see it degenerating on every level, from international politics to the interactions I have when I buy a loaf of bread or when I just try to say hello to someone on the street. But if we commit to take some time to calmly remember or discover what we really need, I think we'll find that, yes, we like to win arguments. We like to avoid annoying or boring people. Part of us likes to pass on our pain to others with our clever wit. And we like to avoid hearing disturbing information. But we need better relationships. We need to understand and to be understood. We need to be loved, whether or not we're knowledgeable or witty. We need to hear another's truth, even if it is painful, because not knowing or imagining is more frightening. Most ethical decisions, I think, come down to short-term versus long-term goals. And we know that now when it comes to environmental dilemmas. although knowing still does not translate into actually changing our behavior enough. And in our work, whenever we're faced with a decision whether to be honest, we choose honesty when we have the long-term health of people, companies, communities, families in mind. When we communicate, we have the same choices. Silence and violence may help us avoid pain in the short term, but only ethical communication will help us personally grow and will help us to build the relationships that we want and that our communities need. A horizontal religion has very long-term goals. In fact, they're endless, because the nature of the horizon, of course, is it's something that you're always going toward, not something that you can ever reach. And how boring human life would be if we actually reached the horizon and fell off the end of the earth. But to be true to such heroically long-term goals, we need to learn to communicate more ethically with ourselves, with our culture, and with other human beings so that we understand more today than we did yesterday, and so that we will have both closer and broader relationships tomorrow. Thank you.
You have been listening to a platform address presented to the Ethical Society of St. Louis by Kate Lovelady, leader of the Ethical Society of St. Louis, on 7 October 2007.